Tony Evans, Los Ranchos Elementary, in the trenches with kindergarten, first grade, and of course, 15th year of reading recovery.
Hi, I'm Marlene Mendes, and I'm at San Luis Obispo High School.
Hi, I'm Debbie Heck, and I teach math, 7th and 8th grade, at Laguna Middle School.
Jim Quessenberry from Oral Bay High School, EL teacher, English, and occasionally social studies.
Okay, thank you very much for introducing yourselves. We're glad that you're here. If there's no additional public comment, then we'll move on to item one, which is reports by student representatives, school staff, administration, and board members. We have no student representatives tonight. Are there any staff reports? Let's see, board reports. Administration? Then we'll have board reports. I can't tell whose microphone goes on first, so I just trust that I will get to you if my head can't swivel fast enough. Mr. Unger.
Sure, and I just wanted to, I think I sent everybody some information this morning about the state budget, but of course I was at CSBA directors this weekend, and if the big news is that there's no state budget, and I know Mr. Miller will talk about that. The talk is that there will be agreement on the state budget probably this week, and I think that's what I sent you all, an article from the LA Times today. The good thing is we'll probably get a state budget. The bad thing is it's going to have some pretty significant cuts in education, and one of the reasons that folks are predicting that is because the original cuts, the part of the president's proposed stimulus act, there would be increases in Title I funding, special education funding, and possibly construction funding as well. So that was the House bill. I don't think it's gone to the Senate yet. So we can hope for some help there. Folks can go to the NSBA website, and I can't tell you exactly where to look. I haven't been able to find it, but there's a list by state and by school district about how much school districts could expect if the budget if that stimulus act passes as is. So CSBA continues to look at the state budget and will continue to fight for our students and what's right for California. By the way, the adequacy lawsuit is going forward. We have not filed the adequacy lawsuit yet. We expect that will be filed shortly.
Thank you.
Madam President, could I just piggyback on Chris's? School Services of California also has that website, Chris, that specifies the state and the districts, and we were looking at that this morning, again, whether the final act looks like what's been proposed or not remains to be seen, but it certainly would be a 1 or 2 year, one-time money kind of assist to school districts in California.
Yeah, do you have the website for that? Because it would be interesting for everybody to see. It could be a significant chunk of money, and whether it passes or not.
I'm sorry, I don't have it with me.
And I don't know if we can get in or not, if it's password, if you have to be a school services person to get into it.
There was a link that you could just click.
Just add one more thing. It's nice to have a federal government that's looking at schools. So I just want to leave that out there, too.
Mr. Angel.
Mr. Buckman, I believe, had his mic on first.
Thank you, sir. One of the interesting pieces in this entire budget battle is that the legislators are still telling public education leaders and still telling the governor and still telling each other that they're not hearing from us. They're not hearing from the parents, they're not hearing from teachers, they're not hearing from students, And so they're kind of feeling like maybe this is okay. So it's incumbent on us to start the emails.
Did have a phone conference conversation with Mr. Blakeslee last Friday, I believe it was. And one of the stalemates that exists in the legislature is the Republican pledge to not include any new revenue proposals in the state budget. And Mr. Blakeslee assured the three of us that were on this conference call that that everything was on the table and that Republicans would consider revenue enhancement measures. The only thing I would say to folks who are saying that they're not hearing from us is I'm a little worried about what planet they are on in terms of reading the catastrophic things that are happening to school districts across the state of California, spread across the front page of virtually every newspaper in the state. If our legislators are not hearing from us, then they're simply not looking.
Thank you, Dr. Ballantyne.
Piggybacking on Mr. Buckman, please write to Sam Blakeslee, Right Table, Waldenau, just to align, tell him what you're looking for. And then I just want to offer kudos. As a parent, I got a chance to visit Pacheco Elementary the other day. And what I saw surprised me. It was 85 degrees out, and there was snow. It was really nice that the kindergartners got to play in the snow, 85 degrees. They're all bundled up and whatnot. But I saw the teachers and the principal out there with shovels and working really hard, and I just wanted to thank Mr. Mayfield and the kindergarten staff for putting that on, because I had a great time. My daughter had a great time, and just really kudos to the Pacheco program.
Thank you. Oh, did you want to piggyback?
No.
Okay.
Yeah,
Mr. Spatafor.
I don't want to piggyback.
Thank you.
I just wanted to recognize the teachers and the administrators at each school through the inauguration that just occurred, a historical day. Many teachers and administrators incorporated a learning event from that day into their classroom and into the schools in various ways. And I just wanted to recognize the teachers and the administrators at each school site that did that, that really provides something that the students aren't going to get out of a textbook, but occurs maybe once every 5 or 10 years when something as amazing as what happened with that inauguration occurred. So I want to thank the teachers and the administrators who added that component.
At the courthouse in SLO, and then the defense goes at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It should be very interesting, and there's some other high schools that have teams, too, I hear. But please come if you can.
Okay, and that leaves me. I had the opportunity this week to attend the science fair at Los Osos Middle School, which was wonderful. The kids, it's just amazing what the kids can do. I was really impressed with all of the projects that I saw, and that was last week. This week, I visited Baywood School and had a chance to talk to one of the teachers at some length about the FOSS science program that they're using, and they really like it. They say the kids really like it, and that's where the love of science is incubated, and so I felt that I sort of saw it progressing on at the middle school. It was very fun to be both places. So that's my report. Dr. Eisenrath Rogers.
Thank you. I wouldn't be able to go home if I didn't respond to Walt's favorite team comment.
Right. She has a child involved.
And imagine how proud I am. He's the accused arsonist. A very good witness, apparently. So SLO High School will also be in that competition and is downtown at the courthouse, and it's all day and it's entertaining. And the other thing is, Mark and I will be at the Los Osos Middle School Career Day on February 12th. talking to the middle schoolers about their, they've all been tested and they've come up with, they're doing it slightly differently this year. We were both there last year as well. And this year they've been given tests ahead of time to differentiate whether they're artistically inclined or athletically inclined or mechanically inclined. And then they will be sent to us and we'll be in those various areas. So that will be interesting. And then we've all been invited to the Morro Bay High School Career Day to stop in. And that's the following Thursday, which must be the 19th. So we'll see you there.
Did they test to see if anybody wants to be school board members? Is that what's going on?
Okay, thank you.
Excellent.
Mr. Miller, status of the state budget.
Well, I think what Mr. Beckman and Mr. Unger have brought up is the essence of the lack of progress has been made recently. I would echo Mark's comments about encouraging you to make 9%. What happens? And so in this time of great cuts and everything, we should be holding our legislature accountable for all of the money that is being hijacked along the way and not passed on to schools. They did this once before with special ed money. I think it was about 7-8 years ago. There was a significant amount of money passed down from the federal government, and the state of California just held on to it and never gave it to schools. And that's within their legal right to do so because they're the conduit for the money. But I think we need to hold them accountable on that aspect of it. The other part that scares me a little bit, makes me nervous, is some recent comments that you can find quoted in newspapers across California at the moment, is that the legislatures are, as Chris was talking about, getting ready to actually have put the dots and the I's and the crosses on the T's for a budget package when the state or the feds release their information, and now they're kind of thinking, well, it looks like the feds are going to bail us out. I think that the point that has to be remembered, and if anybody's going to communicate this to the legislators, the federal money is only 2-year money, and then it's done. This is a significant amount of money being passed down to schools, but it is only for 2 years, and the feds are very adamant in their expectation that everybody realizes at the end of 2 years this won't be repeated. So the fundamental shortfall, the fundamental structural defect within the state of California's budget needs to be addressed. And just getting federal money is not going to fix that problem. Chris?
I know one of the budget proposals that has come out and is strongly favored by the Republicans is a hard cap on spending. Could you address what a hard cap on spending would look like and what that might do to the state education budget?
I think that the model they're looking at is to make a statement that there will be a certain percentage of increase in spending and nothing else will be allowed constitutionally. So if it turns out to be a percentage, it would be a 2% increase in spending by the state of California. And what that could do is put us in an adverse position to Prop 98, which acts as a floor and not as a ceiling. It's a minimum guarantee of educational spending. And there are years in which we would exceed, let's say it's a 2% increase that the state decides is the maximum amount that can be increased in spending, that Prop 98 might go up 4%. So now our floors that say we have to do this and we have to do that. But if we had some sort of a cap on our spending, how are we going to be able to handle those types of mandates and requirements? So it just has to be crafted very carefully if that's what the Republicans are going to require in order to raise taxes, and it looks like that's exactly what they're going to hold out for, and the Democrats need to raise taxes in order to balance the budget, then this spending cap needs to be very carefully done.
I think if I could piggyback, I think the notion of a hard cap kind of takes the leadership factor out of our legislature and makes decisions happen by formula or happen by statute or happen by regulation. And I think what we're seeing in the in the current crisis we're in and the circumstances that led up to it, as we were reading in an editorial today, is what California needs is leaders. They need human beings. They need intelligent people to take a look at what California needs and be able to make decisions, yes, sometimes tough decisions, that are in the best interests of the people of California and not hide behind some rigid wall of regulations that prevents them from being able to make a decision.
And John? In line with that, I think part of the problem is the poor structure in California for funding. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Prop 13 limits the increase in property tax to 2% per year. So over a five-year period, if property increased by 25%, the tax wouldn't increase by 25%, it would increase by 2%. If property depreciates by 30% over 3 years, that's what the value will go down to, percentage for percentage, but coming back up it'll only be 2%, and that's where your funding comes from. So until legislators have the courage to address the fundamental flaws in both the funding and the payment or the aspect of what the funding means, nothing will be changed in California, and everything driven by initiative complicates that more than solves it.
Item number three is a resolution number 080809, Arts and Music Block Grant Expenditures. Dr. Matakis.
It was our K-6 program in visual arts, theater arts, and dance, along with the need to provide professional development for staff. We've hired teaching artists to support our K-6 teachers in the delivery of standards-based lessons in visual arts, theater arts, and dance. Funds also were allocated to support the secondary school's band and choir programs. We presented our end of the year report to you as a board last year, and since that time, or prior to that time, you set an objective in our strategic plan, which was to develop a fully integrated standards-based visual and performing arts K-12 program. These funds directly support your direction. Our site councils have been notified through their principals of this decision, as we're in our second year as well of this program. Since we are allocating the funds for district-wide purposes, a resolution is required. That resolution is included with this item, and we request that you approve this resolution supporting our arts and music block grant expenditures.
I would like to make a motion to approve the resolution as set forth.
And as a member of the VAPA committee that's been meeting for two and a half years now, I'd like to second that motion.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Spadafore, second by Mr. Buckman. Is there any public comment?
And before the vote, I would like to, if I may, I want to thank Dr. Matakovic and also the members of the public community and the teachers, board members who have met on that committee. They put in countless hours to develop this fully integrated sequential program. And I think the labor that's gone into this is bearing fruit when you hear the students and the teachers in terms of the implementation. And I think that the members and Dr. Matakovic should be thanked for the continuation of the strategic plan and the goals.
Thank you.
And if I could, I think it's important for the public to understand that these meetings tend to go on after school. They sometimes run fairly late, and the staff has been incredibly wonderful, as have the community representatives from the different art programs. And it has not been an easy task because of the lack of funding from the state.
Okay, under action discussion, we have item four, approval of 2008-2009 summary report for the Arts and Music Block Grant Funds. Dr.
Yes.
Matakovic.
Thank you, Madam President. Another requirement of the Art and Music Block Grant, as we accept these funds, we must provide a summary report by February 2nd to the Department of Education. We have completed this report, which is included with this item, and we request that you approve this report tonight so we can meet the deadline. We're very pleased to report that all students K-6 are receiving standards-based art lessons and that a large number of our secondary students are able to select art courses, as evidenced by the high numbers of students reported in this summary. So we request that you approve this summary report. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll move approval.
I'll second.
Catherine, was that you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So moved by myself, seconded by Dr. Eisenrath Rogers. Mr. Angel.
Just a comment. Thank you, Ms. Dr. Matekovic, for briefing me on the whole grant and what this all meant. I really appreciate that. One comment would be, in the future, if the board can get stuff just a little bit more ahead of time and before we have to approve anything to the state, I don't want to be backed into a corner saying this is our last meeting before we can send this to the state. In case there's something we feel we can't approve. I don't see anything here, but just in the future, if there's, I don't want to be backed into a corner by a deadline. Thank you.
Is there any public comment on this item? Okay, seeing none then, we have a motion on the floor. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Item 5 is an overview of the school attendance review board by the acronym SARB. Presented by Karen Lowe.
We're here to also answer questions and give us specific information about their site. The School Attendance Review Board was created by legislature in 1974 to coordinate school, community, and home efforts to deal with students' attendance and behavior problems. It's to be composed of representatives from the school district and the community. Those members that serve on our district SARB come from a variety of agencies, as you can see listed. We have some district representation, and then we have a very stable attendance and representation from the agencies that you can see listed there on the overhead. Many of these representatives have been on our particular SARB for a number of years and have been very supportive and very conscientious about the work that they do. They're an outstanding group of people to work with. Students are referred to SARB by the school sites after normal avenues of school, classroom, district counseling, and other kinds of interventions have been put into place and try to resolve the issues. The SARB goal is to identify a solution or appropriate resources to resolve the student's problems and help the student be successful at school and to help the student get to school so that they can be successful. It all starts at the site. The site identifies students with attendance concerns. They have a variety of interventions that they have in place to work with the students, from counseling to detention, Saturday programs, parent conferences, contracts. Many of them set up SAFE meetings to provide resources for their students, SSTs, and a variety of things that these guys can speak to a little bit later as well. They identify truant students, and notifications are required to be sent. The Ed Code identifies a student as being truant when they've been out of school for 3 or more days without a valid excuse, or have been tardy in excess of 30 minutes for 3 or more days. The first letter is sent at that point when those 3 absences have occurred. the second letter then can be sent anytime after that, or is sent with any following unexcused absence. If it's determined by the site, then that SARB is the next step or the next thing to happen. They refer the student to the SARB committee. SARB is scheduled to meet monthly. It's held with or without student parent attendance. The student and parents receive a letter regarding the meeting 10 days, a minimum of 10 days prior to the time, and the schools have also have talked to the parents and students about when the meetings will be, when their appointment is, and so if they are, they need to make the arrangements to be there. We ask that both parents try to be there if possible, and so and generally there is not a reason that the time that's been given to them has changed, because there's been discussion prior to that time being established. School site administrators attend and present the student's case to the review board. Lots of discussion happens with questions to the student. Particularly if it's a secondary student, questions to the parents. Parents ask questions of the board, and as well as the student asks questions. A disposition is determined, and some of the dispositions that our district uses is referral back to the school site with a behavior attendance contract. And this referral can go with a deferred placement or without a deferred placement. If it goes with a deferred placement, it means that if the student breaks the contract, is absent again, or has behavior concerns, if that's one of the problems again, that the school can then refer the student to the deferred placement, which could be a transfer to community school or whatever the deferred placement was set out to be. School transfer can happen, particularly, again, in middle school and high school students to community school, sometimes to Pacific Beach High School, sometimes to adult school. Home hospital has been used on rare occasion. We also have in place now a county truancy board that we will refer cases to, particularly if the case, if they haven't followed the district SARB's disposition that has been given prior. And then we can also refer parents to directly to the DA. The DA also does sit on the county truancy board. After the SARB, that the three high schools brought cases to SARB, and one of the elementary schools brought a case to SARB. Prior to that, it needs to be higher, I think. Yeah. In 06-07, we had other elementary schools and the middle schools as well that would have been included on this list in the previous year. You can see that in this year, it was pretty even split. We had 41 cases, even split between male and female students. One elementary student, and the rest were 9th through 12th grade. In our districts, in our district, we bring cases that have attendance issues. Those, we very rarely have cases that are no attendance issue and only a behavior issue. So you can see all of them had an attendance issue. Some of them also had a behavior issue that came to SARB last year. You can see the ethnicity breakdown of this, how many students had an IEP or special education students. And then the dispositions that were used last year were County Community School, Pacific Beach High School, the adult school, to continue at their present school. And then the other column relates to one student who was placed on home hospital temporarily and then eventually was placed at community school. Two that had moved prior to the SARB hearing taken place, and so they had a disposition if they should return to the district. And then two that were not at the SARB hearing, and further questions and answers were needed, so we convened a subcommittee to meet with them at a later time to then determine what their disposition were was to be. We did go back, and I've got a little bit of data that's not on there about what's happened to those students since they went to those places. And so the community school students, that you see a total of 13, and when you add the the students that did go to community school from the other preliminary dispositions, there were actually more than 13. And we have about 14 that are still attending at community school. We have one that graduated, two that moved prior to the SARB and enrolling at community school. We have one that's a runaway, one that chose to go to independent study rather than at community school, and one that is took the Chesapeake High School test and then didn't enroll in community school and left school at 16. And we have one that moved prior to the SARB, a runaway, two that are on independent study, and then one that was referred to community school. So that's the statistics for last year, and so we can see that out of those rough totals of what's happening to the students after they have gone through SARB, about 29 of those students are currently still in our district or at community school or have successfully completed and graduated, and then we have about 12 students that have left the district for one reason or another. This year the state is looking at the SARB legislation and proceedings in their current handbook, and so when that handbook comes out, we will be looking at our handbook to see what updates. This is actually going to happen countywide. I participate as part of this position in a countywide committee that meets about every other month to look at SAR procedures and things in the district, and then so we will be looking at our handbook and see what updates need to be made at that time. So we have people that I've already introduced and myself are happy to answer any questions that you might have regarding our Student Attendance Review Board.
Mr. Spanifort.
Thank you, Marilyn. Karen, a couple of things for everybody, whoever wants to add. Several things. On the monthly meetings, when are they usually scheduled and where?
We hold them in the district up here in the district complex. They're held, I think it's the second Wednesday of each month. They start in the morning and go as long as they need to go, depending on the number of referrals that we have.
And out of those meetings that are scheduled throughout the year, how many occur without parents, either parent?
I didn't bring that statistic with me.
Is it often or is it not? Do you usually have parents there?
We usually always have parents there. We may have one or two in a given day without parents.
Okay. And then the other is in follow-up with the various interventions that are used after the initial SARB hearing for each of the students, is family failure to follow up or the intervention itself, between those two, what affects the success or failure for the student, or can you lay it at one or the other? The interventions being used, is the family a factor in not?
The family support and so the community agencies that are there will bring forward what they know about and how they've been involved with the family to date and or how they might be able to be involved with the family in the future.
When the interventions at school aren't effective and you're relying more on community services or organizations to provide some support for the family or intervention for the family, how effective are the community organizations that are participating in SARB with helping the family and the student either come to school, be on time, or not be a disciplinary problem?
I don't know if these guys have some specific cases. I can say that in some of the cases that I've seen where the support has come at the meeting, if the family follows through, it can be very effective. I mean, from the point where some of the they were bringing in some wrap services to the family, so they were having somebody in the home to help the family get the student up and that kind of thing. Yeah. Transportation sometimes and bus passes for students that are in the secondary level that are having trouble getting transportation to school in a timely fashion. Those kinds of things can be very effective.
Well, you know, the reason I'm asking is I'm wondering, as follow-up from the school, is there a point in time 30, 60 days after the SARB meeting where there's an analysis made as to what may be the reason a student isn't progressing, either attending or not being late or being less of a behavioral problem? because of any ongoing issues family-wise or any lack of support from the community services? Or, what, in other words, when we see a student at the end of 5 years and you see a deteriorating attendance or tardy or grade situation, where is there, or is there an evaluation along the way to saying this isn't working, or the family needs more help, or the community's not doing what they can do, services to come in? Is there an ongoing evaluation of why a student is continually tardy, absent, or having failing grades and behavior issues?
I'm going to let, if these guys address that, that would happen at the school site. It wouldn't happen as a function of SARB unless SARB has put that in place and said we want to review in 30 days, and we will do that. They do that sometimes, and we bring a case back in 30 days or 60 days to revisit it and see what's happened since then. That happens occasionally. It doesn't happen a lot. So any of the other reviews that would occur at the school site.
At school. Once they have an SST, we continue to follow up with them. Counselors will follow up with them on a regular basis. It might be, you know, once a week to start out with, and then if students are coming on a regular basis, then it might go to every 2 weeks. If we find that the interventions that we're using at school aren't working, we oftentimes will do a SAFE meeting, which is another intervention with county agencies that all get together. It's a voluntary meeting, so parents have to volunteer to go to that. That's not something that you can require of them. But pretty typically, when it gets to the point where we've done what we can at school and we're counseling and we're trying to figure out what is going on with our students, we will then take them to a SAFE meeting to get other interventions, which could be, you know, wrap services, therapeutic behavioral services. Sometimes they'll have in-home services. If a student is SARBed and returns to San Luis Obispo High School, then we are also continuing to monitor and watch pretty much on a daily basis. We will alert our attendance staff, and they will let the counselor and the dean know if that student is absent that day. And we will follow up with parents. We will follow up with them when they return, either the next day or if they're out for several days. So we're continually looking at avenues to work within our site and also within the community. When our students go to community school, we are in direct contact with them as well on how they're progressing academically, behaviorally, and attendance-wise, because for a lot of them, their goal is to either return back to San Luis Obispo High School and graduate or go to Pacific Beach and graduate. So we're in direct contact with them and monitoring that.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. First of all, I want to apologize to Karen Lopez. We've had two long phone calls today, and I really appreciate the time. There are some reasons that I couldn't do it last week. So, I have a couple of questions, if it's all right, Madam President.
Certainly.
State law has a definition of habitually truant. Do you remember about how many days that is?
I think we have it here.
A truant is 3 days of unexcused absence.
You can set in motion some interventions that even haven't been mentioned, although you did have a long list of interventions. One of my favorites that was the vehicle code that says we can actually, if we turn them in, they cannot get their driver's license. So if they're a truant at 13, they might be denied their driver's license.
That's correct.
And within the district, do we have a number that where it triggers somebody going to SARB?
We don't have a set number. We leave that to the sites to determine when they want to make that decision.
Okay. Is there a range that you can see that we have? Is it 10 to be 10 or 20 or 30?
There's not a range that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. This is a sort of a fluff one, but today I've really come to understand why SARB is a sort of a positive intervention. So can you give us more of an explanation why it's a positive intervention?
Well, I think it's a positive intervention because they're building a relationship with that student, and that student's getting some attention and some support that they need, you know, along the way. All of those interventions are hopefully looked at as a positive intervention for those reasons, to provide the resources to help the student be successful. These guys might have some specifics.
I guess in follow-up to that, though, would we want that to happen as soon as possible in a student's life? Okay. I know that it's probably some board members starting to look at the clock. Attendance and the little bit of research that I was able to do, attendance seems to be a really strong indicator of whether a child's on a path to success or starting to go down. Is that also staff's opinion or what you see?
Yes, it can be, yes.
Okay. And so one of the ways to deal with that would be to use SARB as an intervention because it's
could be
attendance
one of the ways.
Triggered?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Karen, I had a couple of questions. Some really basic questions.
I might be able to answer them.
Such as, who has oversight over SARB? Is it a county board? Is it a San Luis Coastal board?
It's the district SARB is a San Luis district board.
Services is typically for students who might be having mental illness, and it's a way of keeping them in their home and their community without having to have them hospitalized.
That makes sense with the W. You know, I wrote down RAP services, and I think I need to find out what that is. So. And sort of piggybacking on what Mr. Buckman had to say, there is a minimum number of absences or tardies by which a child is considered truant. But
yes.
What we try to do is maintain the latitude at the school sites to work with the students. There's no particular number of truancies or tardies that triggers a SARB hearing. It's up to the administration at the various school sites.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see. I don't know who was up.
Catherine.
First, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Thank you. I was actually going to ask Mr. Shinoa, so if you just happen to be at the mic.
Hi, Bob Shinoa, Dean of Students, Morbe High School. I just wanted to add, for us, when we take a student to SARB, our usually desired outcome is to place that student at community school or PBS, Pacific Beach High School. We're interested in the best educational placement for the student. And if the student's got attendance problems and behavior problems at our school, the answer may be a different placement. And so that's usually where the reason we take a student to SARB is we're looking for that change of placement.
Thank you.
Mr. Shinoa, may I ask you a question?
Sure.
I know that we've actually asked you this particular question before. When looking at a student, for example, in an expulsion hearing with a long history of truancy, and then we'd ask the question, why wasn't this child SARBed earlier in the process? And we understand that it's a site-based decision, but given that we are now, it's now being presented as a positive intervention, do you think it's worth rethinking whether we get these kids into the SARB process earlier so as to maybe that enlightens them in some way or scares them in some way so that they behave differently and don't have to be sent to a different school?
There's if the problem is the need for RAP services, yes, there's a reason to take that student to SARB to gain those services. If the problem is just that the student is deciding to cut classes,
there's several other dispositions that can come out of SARB. I mean, one can be that parents have to attend class, that parents can be fined, and I thought during the presentation you indicated that it doesn't have to be a relocation, that in fact some of the kids are referred right back to their current school. Okay, just want to understand that. I looked at the numbers you gave us for this year. And as a percent of population, so within the different ethnicities, there's a definite trend that do I put this? That Anglo children are less likely to be SARBed. Hispanic children are more likely. Black students are much more likely, and actually Filipino students have the most likely chance.
From these numbers, you can get that?
Sure.
Wow.
You take the student population by ethnicity and divide this, and you get a percentage. I have the actual percentages, but...
I meant the other part of your conclusion, which was a more likelihood for a racial group to be treated differently than another racial group.
And so I just call that to the attention of the district and the administration. I'd like to at this point ask if this can come back as a future agenda item where we look at the current board policies that we have regarding this, and write into the policies some of the positive parts of the intervention that we're talking about, and some of the dispositions, because the policies that exist right now are probably fairly old and are not reflecting this positive intervention. Just so.
Right, and if the state, you know, it might be good to see when the state handbook comes out what's in there and what the changes are in there. We'd have the most current data at that time. I know countywide we convened a committee to look at what we're all doing countywide because we wanted to see if there were things that should be changed or addressed at the different school districts, and we discovered that we're pretty much doing the same things in terms of the letters and the notifications and what we can do. So we didn't go forward with the countywide handbook.
What you want to do is bring this back to draft the administrative regulations, which is something the board has not done heretofore, and I don't think it's a good trend.
I specifically asked that we look at the board policy and not at the administrative regulation. Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Mr. Spadafor.
Karen and everyone else who's here, is there anything that could benefit the SARB team and the school sites that is coming out of the process, if you said this may change or this may enhance our ability to do anything? Is there any ongoing evaluation about what would help or what would improve, or is that part of the process or something that isn't done, an evaluation of the process itself? You know, what's working, what isn't working throughout the year through SARB?
I want to let them speak first.
Gentlemen?
I think that as far as SARB and working with Karen, who heads up the SARB board, we're always in direct communication with her. And I feel like the SARB works great for our students. And I feel like whether I've taken a student there because I think San Luis Obispo High School isn't working for them and we need to potentially look at another placement, or I'm taking them there because potentially I'm looking at are there some mental health services that potentially we can get? Do they need some in-home services and we want to go ahead and give that a try and have them return to our site? We're continually dialoguing about, you know, is this working, is this not working? We're evaluating at our site, and we haven't had anything come up that we would have called and said, Karen, hey, can we talk about this? You know, we think this might be a good intervention, or, you know, can we adjust this? So we really feel like SARB is very supportive of what we're trying to do with students, and we feel like the services that are offered there. When I go and I'm asking for something, I'm really pleased with the outcome, and oftentimes the student gets more than I've asked for, which is really nice. And then, like I said, we follow up, and if something happens to not work, we're going to either take them back to SARB and see what else is going on, or we're going to refer them to SAFE and see what they have available. But I think the process is working well.
Thanks.
Mr. Angel.
So
opportunity came up first, so we are hopeful that we can get some of the services for SAFE and SARB overlap. So we're looking that for this particular student, we can get those services through SARB more quickly than if we waited for the SAFE. So we will do both. We don't necessarily have an alternate placement in mind when we take them. Sometimes we'll have students that need to go, need to, you know, meet with a different population of you know, members from the community and different agencies. And a lot of times they'll talk with them and they'll put them on a deferred placement, and that student will come back on a contract and they'll do just fine. Knowing that if they don't do what they're supposed to do and attend school and, you know, behave and, you know, have grades of, you know, C or better, then their next placement will be a community school. So does that clear that up?
That does.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Unger.
So I see SARB as one, as hopefully one more cog in the wheel to prevent kids from being expelled, because as a school board member sitting in expulsions, it's not something that we find very pleasant, and I know you guys who have to go there don't find it very pleasant either. Is SARB working then to support kids from becoming expelled? And if not, just kind of thinking back to what Mr. Spadafore was saying, is there anything else we could be doing to help that issue?
I don't think we bring students to you for expulsion because of attendance. We bring students to you for expulsion because they've violated some of our board policies, for instance, two incidents of drug or alcohol use within a 12-month period. It's tough to foresee those, and asking SARB to intervene in those when we don't know a student's going to do that is very difficult. We bring a student to you if they bring a weapon to school. It's really tough to foresee that and go to SARB and say, we think this kid might bring a gun next week, can you do something? You know, that triggers an expulsion, though, or an expulsion hearing. So I'm not looking to SARB for an intervention to preclude an expulsion. I'm looking to SARB for an intervention because we got a square peg in a round hole and we're looking for that square hole.
If I could intervene here also, I think that one of the interesting pieces that Karen shared was the disposition of the students who went through SARB, and I didn't hear expulsion as being one of the things that had happened to any of the kids. There were no expulsions among last year's SARBs.
Ms. Roger asked me to sit in for a second while she gets some more coffee, so I'm going to use this as an opportunity to recognize myself. I just wanted to finish the point I was making. This is the board policy 5113.1, parent, lowercase a, truancy. And the third paragraph states the following. Habitually truant students may be referred to a school attendance review board, parent SARP. That's the extent of the policy and its statement. The meat and where the rubber meets the road on many of the board policies is the way they are implemented through the administrative regulations. The reason that board policies are drafted in this kind of generalized sense is because we trust you guys to do the work and make it happen and make an effective program. Think you're doing a wonderful job.
Madam, Your Honor. Thank you, Mr. Millar. Mr. Millar is absolutely correct. The board policies are to be general, and the board policies are board policies. And as we look at them, and there's room for improvement, I think we should take that opportunity. Our ability to work with them and craft them in a way that would place an emphasis on the board's desire to see less truancy and less, by the way, the attendance policy, the absence and excuses, makes no mention of SARB. So that policy might include that sentence. But the board has the opportunity to place an emphasis on that. And the reason that I brought and asked for this to be here and to brought this forward is because Our stated goal in this district is to close the achievement gap. And when a child's not in school, not learning, not doing homework, not taking tests, we are not closing the achievement gap. In one report that I found, national dropout rate 30%, of which 80% of those children are chronically absent from school. Excessive absences and truancies usually equate to poor achievement, mediocre self-esteem, lower promotion and graduation rates, and lower employment opportunities, more children dropping out of school. I see SARB, and I see attendance, and I see truancy all as one package that can be used as another tool in our effort to close the achievement gap. And so I would ask the board's indulgence to at least consider this again in the future when this new report comes out that Karen's talking about, so that we can try to really convey to the public how important attending school and not allowing your kids to be truant is.
Well, the question of the benefit of an evaluation, you know, came up, and I think there's always a benefit to evaluation, and I'm looking forward to getting that new handbook and working with the other districts in the county, and we're always looking for other interventions and other, you know, even other hammers to use over the heads of some of particularly secondary students to get their attention, to help them see how important attendance is, and to get them there so that they can be doing their homework and benefiting from the lessons in the classroom. So there, yes, there is a benefit to that, and yes, we always are looking for those interventions, and we are looking forward to looking at that when the state comes out with their new handbook. So,
okay, then, Mr. Buckman is asked to revisit SARB at a future date. Is there support for that idea? Mr. Buckman, did you have an idea when you wanted to revisit SARB?
Yeah, in light of the fact that Karen's expecting a state report, I think we ought to wait till we have that before we dive into the pool. Let's make sure there's some water in it.
You know, and I would possibly add, to put some specificity to this, that I imagine the SARB team, once that document is present, will analyze it, apply it to the present situation locally, and maybe we should allow some time for implementation of any additional steps, new ideas, and then I don't know exactly when, but that may take some months before that all falls into place, to allow time for it to settle in and see if it's useful.
In the interim, I would like to ask staff, in particular Dr. Matakovich, since she works with us closely on these expulsion hearings, to see if she can communicate to the administrators what our concern is regarding using SARB as a resource tool, not because attendance issues come before us for expulsions, but because when we sit at the end of the process and look backwards over the history that you've made over a child's record of attendance, patterns seem to emerge that appear to us that could have been interrupted if SARB had been used as a beneficial tool. And so I wonder if, rather than us discussing in this open forum, maybe it's something that we could ask Mary, Dr. Matakovich, to talk with us or direct, communicate some information to you about our interest in having, making sure that SARB is used not just as a tool for redirecting a child to another school, but to get, as Ms. Bueller said, some help and some services provided to them. Make sense? Okay. Thank you.
I guess I'm just not so convinced that the staff needs as much help from the board.
Yeah, for my part, I feel like I don't want to be directing staff how to do their job working with students. They know SARB is an option, and if they choose not to exercise it, I have to respect their professional judgment in that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Lopez, and all who came. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on to item 6, approval of additional new and modified secondary courses for 2009-2010.
Good evening.
Mrs. Dalkiscamp.
Earlier in the year, the board reviewed and approved new and modified courses for the 2009-2010 school year. And tonight we're coming back and asking you to review and approve some additional courses for 2009-2010. As you may have noticed, all of the new proposed courses on your list are ROP courses. And since Karen is still here, I just wanted to recognize that she's not only the principal of Pacific Beach High School and coordinator of the district SARB, but she also coordinates our ROP program. And it is through her work with our high school teachers that some of these courses were brought forward. It's the desire of our high schools to offer a greater variety of courses to students in an attempt to meet their interests and also to increase the numbers of students who are enrolled in our ROP courses. And then in addition, you'll notice at the end, we've also included modifications to a few existing courses. So they're presented tonight for your review and hopefully approval.
Okay, Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I think it's great that three of the five courses, ROP courses that are being presented, meet several of the A to G requirements, mm-hmm. and that's something that I have an interest in, and I'm glad that we're moving in that direction.
Okay. Mr. Spadafore?
I just wanted to also say I thought the courses were creative, and I'm sure they're meeting needs that will help students achieve specific goals that they have, and I'd like to make a motion to approve these proposed secondary courses.
I'd like to second that.
So we have a motion by Mr. Spadafore, a second by Mr. Buckman. Those in favor?
I'd like, point of order, Madam.
Yes.
Chair. It's my understanding, Kim, is there time for discussion after? Okay. If I'd just like to make a comment. Now I've totally lost it. Okay. Let's just take the vote. There you go. Sorry.
That's okay. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nope.
Item 7, approval of instructional calendar for 2009-2010. Is there, let's see who's presenting this. Dr. Valentine?
At the last board meeting, the board was presented with a calendar proposal that had been endorsed by the Teachers Association. Some concerns were expressed in public comment, focused on a couple of issues. One is some ambiguity in terms of a voting procedure that had taken place indicating teacher preference for the calendar. And secondly, concerns were expressed over the benefits of the calendar for students in instruction. The board voted to not approve the calendar which came forward, which contained a 2-week spring break. And at that time was expressed an interest in further clarification regarding the wishes of teachers regarding this and also some discussion of the benefits of the calendar. So tonight the board has an opportunity to revisit that calendar. Since then, the association has offered to provide a new vote conditioned upon the board approving payment of the costs in order to conduct that second vote. And we've listed a few options for the board at the bottom of the item, which I think are self-evident.
Okay, is there any public comment on this item? Mr. Bedirgan.
Uh,
SLCTA would like this school board to reconsider their last vote. We feel that the way that vote went was between teachers. Professionally, we've addressed it. We've taken steps to see that it won't happen again. But right now, we stand by that vote, and we think that the school board should also.
I'll Mr. move Strong. Approval of the calendar as presented.
I'll second.
Is there any discussion? Well, there's an elephant in this room. Very quiet.
Everybody has their opportunity now.
I guess I'll make my comments.
I think you have somebody here. Oh, if you want to go.
Well, Mr. Angel.
As a parent, one of the things I find tough with this schedule is a two-week spring break. There's not a lot of programs. I spoke with the city in place to deal with the two-week spring break. You look at the summer program. I can't remember the lady's name. Monica said there's a great summer program, but what they're finding with Parks and Rec is trouble hiring somebody for 1 or 2 week periods to help out with our students. Talking to other parents around the district, what they would like to see is some consistency in our schedule. This year threw late start Mondays at them, and then next year we're going to change the schedule around significantly to add a two-week spring break. It just smacks of inconsistency in the schedule making, and as community members and parents, they'd just like to see consistency. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Unger, did you have a comment?
Just that teachers that I've spoken to have opposed the two-week spring break. And I think we've received correspondence from teachers opposing the two-week spring break and being in favor of a one-week spring break. In addition, teachers that I've spoken to have talked about the disruption in instruction in a two-week spring break. In particular, one teacher that I spoke with talked about how difficult it would be to have a consistent program for reading recovery. Other teachers have talked about how it would be a problem for summer vacation for that year. The school would be running a week late. So that's the feedback I've been getting from folks.
Mr. Spadafor.
Thank you. There's something I think that's a primary issue here. I think that the understanding in the agreement through collective bargaining is that the teachers will determine and vote upon this issue for the calendar, and then the board approves it. And obviously, if you have the right to approve it, you can disapprove it. I think that the board investing time in taking a revote on our own based upon individuals who contact us, which there have been many, is not the method in which this is set up. I don't think the board is being asked to do a revote because we're contacted by individuals along the way. That's not the way this system is set up. I think that if teachers who have the responsibility on their end to vote for a proposed calendar take their responsibility and vote, and then their leadership comes here and says this is how and what the teachers have done, I don't think it's our role to re-vote and to tell anyone this is how you should be doing what your responsibility is. And I think that no matter how many people have contacted us and how many people have shown up to speak about this, their involvement with their association should be where that discussion is held, not here. And I move the motion.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers.
I would just like to say that I voted originally against the SLCTA proposal, calendar proposal, not because I don't have faith in the teachers' ability to decide this issue. I do have complete faith in the teachers to decide that. My issue is a procedural one, and it had to do with the way the vote was taken. I feel it was a flawed voting system to have three options put forth because it split the vote, and so there's no way for me to know what the clear majority of teachers' feelings are on the subject. In a sense, it's sort of a hanging shad, and I don't want to have I don't want to make a determination based on a vote that might not be valid. And so I just wanted to say that is my objection.
Okay, and I would say that I object on the same basis that Dr. Eisenrath Rogers does, that the way the vote appears to have been presented didn't demonstrate a clear majority of teachers supporting the 2 weeks. And I don't have any interest in telling teachers how to construct their calendar. So long as there is a majority of teachers, then I'll support the way they want their calendar to be constructed. I've been approached by a number of people who are teachers who are not supportive of the two-week schedule. And if this goes forward tonight, then I just want to tell them I'm very sorry to let you down. You need to take it up with your union. This has become a real tempest in a teapot, and it's a great disappointment. It does not speak well to collegiality and open discussion and working together in an honest and open and honest and above board way between, in my opinion, between SLCTA and this board.
Mina.
Certainly.
Well, it's it's one thing to say we don't want to tell the teachers how to run their business and we trust the teachers to figure out, you know, their own thing, but then we say, well, but we don't like the way you voted because there's no majority. And it's really the province of the teachers' association to determine who the majority is, the majority of their membership and what they proposed. And that's been presented to us. In fact, it was presented to us, Mr. Rodriguez told us twice at the last meeting, this is our calendar, and we're bringing it forward. So you can't have it both ways, you know. If we're going to tell them we don't like your vote and you go do it again, then we probably should pay for it. I don't think we should do that. I don't think we should have taken the vote that we took last time. But to say, you know, we trust you and we think you're running your business and it's your business, and then to turn around and say, but we don't like the way your majority vote was handled, is kind of talking out of both sides of our mouth. And I support the motion that we vote on the calendar, and as I understand the motion, it was the calendar presented at the last go-around.
Any additional comment? Okay, then. Oh, yes, please.
Hi, Debbie Heck from Laguna Middle School. Mrs. Rogers, I did want to agree with you. I do think that I am embarrassed that some of the teachers did come directly to you. They should have gone through the organization. We have had three calendars in the past, and we have been able to select one of the three. I don't think that any one of those three won by what, depending on what the definition is of a majority. And if we had had a three-way tie, we would have not really had a majority, because if you have three choices, it's 33% for each one. I do think that trying the 2 week spring break is worth a try. That is what that had won in the way that we did it. We did it the democratic way, and we had three calendars, and one of them had more votes than the other. So I would encourage you to think about going with the calendar C that we had recommended with the SLCTA.
Thank you.
Can I just make one more quick comment?
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I do think that some of the points that the board members have raised are valid points, and I think that where we maybe start plugging these things in is maybe we change the process, but we change the process the next time we do this. You know, we express board interest in not having a two-week spring vacation. We set some parameters. We don't go in after the fact and change the game plan.
Okay, seeing no further comment, we have a motion on the table, motion by Mr. Unger. Would you restate your motion, please?
The motion is to accept the calendar C as was presented, add the majority, a plurality of votes from the Teachers Association. It's been seconded by.
I think John had the original second.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So a motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Spadafor. Those in favor? Oh, Walt was the original second?
Sorry, I'll share. I want the photo op after the meeting's over, though.
We'll let the attorneys can duke it out later. We have a motion and a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Nay.
Could I have a show of hands so I can get that correctly? Nays? Oh, my.
So then, how was that vote, Mrs. Holmes?
It fails, 5-2.
Thank you.
I'll make a motion, please.
Certainly.
I'd like to send the issue back to the original committee to work with SLCTA to come forward with a calendar that has a majority vote.
I will second Mr. Buckman's motion, and a simple majority is 50% plus one.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mr. Angel. Is there any discussion? Mr. Bedrigian.
We discussed this at our site rep meeting, and it was a near unanimous vote that we would follow the direction of the board, but we felt that we played by the rules and we did what we were directed to do. We came up with a calendar that we felt was fair and in due process. We worked with Central Admin. Central Admin came here and told you that there wasn't any data to support that this was going to have an ill effect on students. And then now we understand our direction is to have another election. And I brought that to the site reps, and the site reps, and the motion was near unanimous that we'll only do that if the school board pays those fees for the time and effort that's going to cost, because we just don't have the budget to go ahead and cover these things. It is a great more time for all of our site reps to go back. They're doing it before school, after school, and so that's where we are. I don't even know if I can get back the original committee. So it is a problem, and that's where we're at right now. So as far as having a committee, we don't have a committee right now. So not sure exactly how this will play out. Thank you.
Okay, then. Mr. Unger.
I would ask for, and I'm not quite sure how to how to phrase this, but I would support Mr. Angel and Mr. Buckman's motion with an amendment that we look at the cost of the election for CTA. And I would ask that they accept that as an amendment.
That we look at the cost of the election? I don't understand.
Yeah, what I'm willing to do, because I am sensitive to the cost of the election, and
I don't want to see this drag on forever. There was a cost that in the election that CTA did bear, and I would support paying for this election first with CTA. If we're going to ask them to revote, then I think that I would support paying for that election. So I would make that as an amendment to the motion. Does that make sense?
That's not what the motion is. The motion is to send it back to the original committee for a new set of options. That's what his motion is.
No, that's not. Can you read back my motion?
To send this back to the committee and work with CDA, CTA to come, SLCTA, to come forward to the board with a calendar that has a majority vote clarified by Mr. Angel to mean 50% plus one.
Okay.
It's
clear to me, though, from what Mr. Bedrigian said, and I don't know if we should wait until after whether a committee can meet or not, but that they have stated that they believe they have taken a vote, they would be willing to revote, but that there is a cost involved with that.
I'll accept the amendment if it gets the amendment needs a second.
I'll second the amendment. The calendar is in the best interest of students, parents, teachers, custodial workers, secretaries, everyone in the district. So I am not in favor of having it held hostage for $375. So I will support that amendment.
But we are willing to hold it hostage until they do it the way we want them to.
I have something also, if I can be recognized.
Please.
I think what we're doing isn't within the contract language. And I believe that the board should think seriously about the step that you're suggesting we take, because there are some parameters outside the seven of us that sit here that have been negotiated, thought out, and been part of the agreement through the collective bargaining system that we can't just intervene with our own idea at this point of what should happen.
Okay, John, interpret the contract for me, please.
No, I can't do that. The contract is being given to us, and we have the two paragraphs here.
I've read
and,
them.
I'm not in a position to interpret the contract for the board. That's not my job. Yeah. I'm just saying, as a board member, my feeling is that we have to be very careful about contract language and the way we apply it or don't apply it.
Madam President?
I'm a board member, not an attorney to the board, so I'm not in a role
The attorney
here
to the board has been consulted in this matter.
Well, then, I don't know about that.
Madam President?
Yes.
If I could intervene, the matter that has been reviewed by our attorney is whether the board's decision to not approve the contract was some kind of violation of the contract, and in the opinion of our advisors, it wasn't. I think administratively, I would have to kind of concur with Mr. Spatafor that I think we need to go through the contractual process, which is to return to a district committee, which is defined in the contract as what that is, and come forward with another proposal, perhaps a simpler proposal of the original proposal, if that is the will of the committee, that would then be voted upon by SLCTA. And what the board is suggesting here is that they would you will indicate your preference about whether or not you would pay for the cost to run the additional voting. And I think that is the procedure, is to go back to the beginning and then come forward with a clean proposal.
I think we've been told, though, Dr. Valentine, that we can't get that original committee back together, or we may not be able to get it back together.
Well, that may be one of the costs of redoing this.
Even though I think this has all been totally unnecessary, I'm not sure that the original committee has to be reconstituted, but a committee with representatives from CTA and from the district would be able to meet and reconsider and bring forth new proposals, since it seems inevitable.
And I think we would administratively agree with that, and I don't know what I don't know of any language, unless Bruce does, that would specify who that committee has to be. I don't think there is any language to that effect.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Buckman.
I think that's what the motion was to take it to a committee. If the amendment is what's holding us up, then, I mean, the amendment's on the table. It needs to be voted on before the original motion, and we can deal with it. We just need to call for the vote, if that's what's holding us up. Dr. Valentine?
That would be the order of business, yes.
But is it...
So the amendment is...
Is it administration's point of view that paying for it is what's outside the purview of the board at this point?
No, I think the board can pay for whatever process it wishes. I'm just recommending that the contractual procedure be done. How it gets paid for is within the board's purview.
I'm going to. Here's what I would recommend. I think we have a motion and a second on the table. I believe that hearing from Dr. Valentine and Mr. Spadafore and Mr. Millar, following the process is what's going to be paramount here. I'm going to, unless it's too late, I'm going to withdraw my amendment. Not that I'm not for doing that, but I think procedurally it makes sense to do that. I'm not sure if the original motion was specific to following the contract language, and that would be my recommendation, is that we have some kind of language in the motion that specifically states we go back to that we absolutely follow the contract language.
I would accept that amendment.
Let me withdraw my second. And suggest we just start a motion from the beginning so that we're totally clear on what we're voting for and what's going on with the whole vote.
We've already had a vote to reject Calendar C, so now we need to do something else. So I'm going to make a motion that, as per the contract, we... Help me with language here, somebody. Send it back to a committee as per the contract we have with CTA.
Pay for cost when he has to vote.
Right, and then we'll follow that procedure, and then if there's a request for that, but I don't want to make that part of my motion right now.
So, Mr. Spadafore.
Thank you.
Point of order, you have a motion on the floor in just seconds. You can have further discussion until there's a second.
All right. Pardon me, you have two motions on the floor. Your original motion has not been withdrawn.
And I'm speaking to the original motion. I have concerns about the number of options that were given to the teachers, but that's not my role to direct or comment upon how votes were presented to the teachers. The contract says that no later than December 1st, a calendar shall be recommended to the Board of Education, and the association shall approve the calendar by December 15th. What we're doing is we're putting into place another process that has never been used before regarding this issue. And it's inconsistent with the language that's contained in that contract. And I believe that in good faith, although we may never have been able to see the fact that there was never going to be a majority but a mere plurality when that contract or that calendar was presented to us, that this is something where the horse has already left the barn. And if the barn needs to be reconfigured, And I believe the teachers must look at that for next year, because I think we're struggling with this because we're already outside the parameters of what the contract states. So I can't be the attorney to the board, but I'm, as a board member, concerned about how we're coming behind this issue too late.
I'd like to agree with Mr. Spadafore. I think there's an assumption amongst all of us that because calendar C was not greater, the total was not greater than A and B added together, that the teachers that voted for A and B were, in a sense, voting against C. That is an assumption that is not correct. We don't know that teachers that voted for A were actually voting against C. They might have been voting against B. So I think that when that some people came to you and said, when we add A and B together, that percentage is greater than what C had, well, that would have happened with any of them. If B had won, had the greater percentage, if you add A and C together, that would have been greater than what B had. So I think that we have an assumption that the people that voted for A and B were actually voting against C. That's not correct.
Mr. Bedrigan.
Just briefly, and I want to thank the board, because I understand that you're struggling with this. I want to thank Mr. Spada for pointing out the legalities. That's something we've looked at too, and we think that that's definitely something we could pursue. We didn't want to go that route. Okay, we respect this school board, and we respect your decisions. We're hoping for the same respect in return. So what we came up with was the fairest compromise that we thought that we could live with, and we were hoping that you would live with it too. And I appreciate Mr. Unger's motion about the pay. So actually the ball is in your court now. So thank you.
Okay, where are we? Do we have a motion on the table?
We have two motions on the table without a second.
Okay. Dr. Valentine, did you want to speak?
Yeah, I don't pretend to be the legal advice to the board either. And Bruce, I'm including you as I say this. We have a side letter from the board that offers a resolution to this issue. I think... presuming that we have a side letter that the board is from SLCTA describing a resolution to the problem. I'm going to stick my neck out and say that the board has the prerogative to agree to that resolution, which would include a revote and covering the cost of the vote.
Okay, so does anyone want to retract their previous motion so that we can get a clean slate?
I'll start with mine.
Okay. I believe so.
Then I will retract mine and go for a fresh motion.
So we have a clean slate now, Mrs. Holmes? Okay. Would someone like to make a motion? Mr. Angel.
I move that we accept the SLCTA offer and pay for it.
I'll second that.
Is that clear?
Let's just add the offer communicated in their January 20th, 2009 letter to the president of the board, Mrs. Rod.
That's part of your... what you were referring to?
Yes, the SLCTA offer... that was offered respectfully by Mr. James Quisenberry, dated January 20th, 2009.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Angel. And a second. A second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Is there any discussion? Any public comment? Oh, Mr. Unger.
Ask one question. We're... Does what Phil is proposing, does that solve the problem of following the contract, or can we just accept this and not go through the other things? And I just want to make sure, based on what Dr. Valentine said, that
again, not pretending to be a legal counsel, and with Mr. Bedrigian in the room, and perhaps you could comment on it. That would be my recommendation at this point. And Bruce, you might want to share.
Okay, I see him.
Just as I said earlier, the SLCTA, when I went to the site rep meeting, I told them of your concerns. We've already addressed the issue, and we're making changes in our bylaws so that we won't be in this situation again.
Thank you. Mr. Robinette?
It sounds like there's a way to solve both the letter of the of what our contract reads and this motion, if it were to pass, which is just from, I'd chair the superintendent's calendar committee, and it's very easy for me to make a phone call to Bruce and say, let's constitute the committee, even if it's by phone. If the top two calendar votes that is in your proposal were what they want to bring to a vote, we've met, we've done our diligence, and then they can conduct their vote paid for by the school district. So I think we can meet the letter of the law if this is a motion that the board wants to do.
Mr. Millar.
I can't advise the board on the law either, but this does strike me as an offer to modify the existing language and itself on an ad hoc basis for this one thing. And if we, as mistaken and misguided as it might be, vote to go this way, I think that would be a reasonable modification of the agreement.
Okay. So we have Mr. Angel has made a motion. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers has seconded it. We've asked for public comment. There doesn't appear to be any further board comment. So those in favor, aye. Opposed?
No.
May we see a show of hands on the aye votes? Okay, so then that passes 6-1. We'll move on to item 8. Oh, item 8 was withdrawn earlier. Let's move to the action consent agenda. We have one item only. Approval of California High School exit exam waiver requests for students with disabilities.
I move approval of item number 9.
I second.
Move by Mr. Unger, seconded by Mr. Spadafore. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Anything for the advance agenda? Then I'll move to adjourn.